Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this will be a good one. We got somebody that's using your language.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear about it. I'm looking forward to it. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, first up on Atlanta Business Radio, founder of Consequent and Brand Velocity, Mr. Jack Bergstrand. How are you, man?
I am fantastic. How are you doing?
Doing well, man. So tell us a little bit about your work. What you guys out there trying to do for folks?
Well, what Consequent does is concentrate on cross-functional initiatives. So when people are in big companies or small companies and they need to work with other people, sometimes that gets complicated.
Really? And when humans are involved?
It's amazing. It doesn't quite work like in the textbooks. But the truth is that when people are working in a particular way, these things work better. And we focus on cross-functional strategies and also cross-functional initiatives.
So now, what is the kind of symptom a client will be having where consequence the answer?
It happens in two different ways. First is when there's trouble, and there's more of a sense of urgency when that occurs. And when we have a turnaround situation, then we come in. Typically, there are important initiatives that people want to go right, and they aren't going right. The other thing is to get them going in the right direction at the very beginning.
So now, what is the profile of your target client? Who do you typically work with? Are they large companies, or it can be like a merger acquisition? Like, when do you typically get engaged?
They're typically large companies and large initiatives in large companies, but it doesn't really have to be. So as long as the initiative is important and there's a cross-functional nature to it, that's where we focus.
Now, when you say cross-functional, which functions are being crossed here? Which departments do you typically work with?
Well, IT is always involved with almost any major initiative, but then it depends on the initiative. So it really crosses marketing, finance, at supply chain, any of the typical functions and organizations that have to work together to get something done.
Would you come in if there was, like, say, in IT, they have a new kind of system that they're putting in place, or maybe they merge with another company and one has one system and then another one has a different one? Would you be around to help them kind of make that run smoothly, or is your function more about, hey, we have a new CIO and this is a new strategy that we're implementing, so we need everybody to kind of be playing together nicely?
It happens both ways. When you look at two companies coming together and having two sets of systems, we will oftentimes get their heads together because that would be like a super cross-functional problem, because you would have the cultures of two different organizations right, coming together and all the legacy systems. So getting it clear up front where they intend to go and why, what they need to do, how they're going to do it, who's going to be responsible. All of that is critically important. The more complicated things get, and systems initiatives tend to be very complicated.
Now, how'd you get into this line of work?
Well, I had a cross-functional background in the Coca-Cola system. I was the chief information officer of the Coca-Cola company, but then also chief financial officer of Coca-Cola Beverages, head of manufacturing logistics for Coca-Cola Beverages, chief marketing officer for Coke New England, and then ran a division. So I got to see a lot of different sides of the equation and noticed how often that broke down and didn't have to. And so a consequent was created in order to help people do better.
Now, what's some of the low-hanging fruit that companies can do better?
The biggest piece of low-hanging fruit that I recommend is doing meetings differently. Most calendars are choked, and usually the output from the meetings themselves are not very good. Just getting people on the same page and heading in a single direction is worth the price of admission, and generally people don't do that, and they'll start further down the chain, and then it's like unboiling an egg at that point.
So then, are you talking about the senior leadership has to do a better job with the meetings?
it can be senior leadership, but senior leadership is relative. So it doesn't like always have to be the CEO, even though we operate at that level pretty often. But if you are a department head and you're the leader of that department head, you're the leadership. Mm-hmm. And you are working with other people who are leaders in a similar way, trying to get work done better, faster, and with less aggravation.
So now what should you, like what word should you be saying or what activity should be you be doing in order to make that run smoother?
Well, it's a process where people individually need to get what they think out on the table. And that typically doesn't happen. Extroverts usually win. Mm-hmm. But once you have the right people in the room, and that's the first part, and they're able to discuss what they believe the direction should be and the time frame it is to do that, to do it, then that provides an opportunity for people to get a lay of the land that will normally come back and bite them later. Once that's known, then whether it's facilitated or not, getting a clear game plan in place on where they intend to go and why and what kind of a time frame, what the priorities need to be, how to best do those things, who should be responsible for what. All these things sound dullingly simple, but in an organizational context, they don't happen by accident.
So then that's where like a firm like yours can come in, where you're kind of fresh eyes in this and kind of a neutral observer?
We are. We tend to, especially on the strategy stuff, we facilitate strongly because usually the power structure is much stronger. And so it takes a lot of strong facilitation to get people headed in a single direction. But the proof is that what normally takes 2 or 3 months using the traditional strategy process, people can usually walk out in a day and a half and have a game plan for their strategies.
Okay, so now I know what you were talking about speaking my language. Right. This guy's a big believer in high velocity.
That's right. That's why it's called Brand Velocity. I think he has a book called The Velocity Advantages.
Yeah, I got to hear about this. Tell us about this book.
The Velocity Advantage is a book that incorporates about 50,000 pages of material from some of the best thought leaders in the world over a long period of time. So if anything, it's just an efficient way to read 50,000 pages. The other thing is that it does integrate from a business standpoint all the different functions and functional areas in a way to get major cross-functional initiatives started right and working in a great way. And so by following the book and using the principles that are there and that have been applied for the last 20 years, people are able to get to a better outcome with less aggravation and greater success.
So is the book kind of, before someone hires you, is that the kind of the first thing they should do is read the book to kind of understand where you're coming from?
It doesn't hurt. And there's a certification for the Velocity Advantage as well. Although typically people have a problem and they want a solution, and it usually happens more on a, you know, on a face-to-face basis, and then they read the book later.
Right. Like sometimes you need help and sometimes you need a helper.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so in the book, though, that came about after you left Coke, you wrote that?
It did. And it began to gel when I became associated with the Drucker Institute in Claremont, California. And Peter Drucker wrote 39 books himself, two-thirds after he was 65.
38 to go.
So he gives me great hope.
Inspiration,
but,
right?
But it started to gel there, and then in some social science work that had been done at George Washington University, and it's the social science part of this that is really unique, and that's usually what gets in the way. Not having that is what gets in the way of cross-functional initiatives.
Now, does some of the challenges come when you have these large organizations? Is just kind of the weight of the organization in terms of people, and when you have that many people and doing lots of different things, you have some politics that are just causing a lot of inefficiencies in being able to kind of all get on the same page and all say, okay, we're all going that way, let's start running, and then you can sprint, where a lot of these smaller, especially in this world nowadays, you don't need to have thousands or even hundreds of people to have a multi-billion dollar organization, and they're able to be very nimble and make changes pretty quickly.
It is much harder, the traditional way to get things done in a large organization than a small one. There's no question about that. However, what both have in common is that when you have an initiative that you want to implement, and you want to implement it successfully, obviously, is that you need to get the right people in the room. And that's true whether you're a Fortune 100 or if you are five people.
Right.
Absolutely. And we just did one last week with a major company. They had a put it together a strategy around culture, which is one of the hardest subjects in the world, and it was a very complicated company. They brought the top 25 people in the company in a room, and in a day and a half, they ironed out a strategy cascade for the future.
So you think that's a good number to have, two dozen people about?
No, I like 15.
15 is your magic number?
Yeah. But it can go up, and it's been as high as 400 before. It just takes a different facilitation style, and you have different expectations. But 15 is generally a magic number in a large organization. It's probably 5 or 6 in a smaller organization.
So now, how does that choosing the 15 come about? Like that, I would think, has its own kind of challenges.
Well, we don't do them if they don't have the right people in the room. And so
who's defining the right people? Are you defining that?
The executive sponsor of the initiative. So every initiative is going to have a different 15 people. And it's some combination of power and subject matter expertise. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's even external parties that are part of it. Could be external consultants or external experts that are involved. But they all need to get in the room. And if they don't get in the same room at the same time and iron this out, then things don't go nearly as well. And what I always say at these sessions is that if I could magically come up with the words that they're going to come up with before they even started, it would have a fraction of the meaning. It's the process of hammering it all out, getting clear on where they intend to go and why, what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, who's going to be responsible for what, that then eliminates a lot of the heartache downstream.
But the identifying those 15, that's a key part of this. Without the right 15, this whole thing is set up to fail, right?
Yeah, and that's the way most large initiatives are launched, is that they might have 15, they're the wrong 15.
Right, so this is a critical element. You have to get this right.
Absolutely.
So now, when you're working with them to get the right 15 in there, there has to be a give and take, and you have to make crystal clear how important the right 15. It's not just because you have to be nice to this person or you want this person to do something down the road, right? It has to be really, is that where a lot of your time is spent, just ensuring that the right 15?
Once they get it, it happens pretty easily.
Do they just bang out the list? Here, give me 15. And they're like, okay, Bob, Mary, Sue, they're just going down writing 15 names? I can't believe it's that simple.
It's not much more complicated than that. The key, though, is getting those 15 in a room. And so it's
so
the
that's
difference.
Another, the herding of the cats problem.
So coming up with the 15 or however many it happens to be, that's an important part. And then getting them in the room, that's the more difficult part, but that's part of this process. And there are enough war stories that people typically don't have a lot of problem with that. And if it goes astray, it can really go astray. We've been in turnaround situations that had a governance structure of more than 100 people. And you can just imagine how ineffective a governance structure of 100 people are. We changed it to 3, and it worked extremely well. But they were the right 3 people, and the right 3 people weren't in that 100. You know,
they were different than the 100 that they picked.
Yeah.
The wealth of knowledge and perspective among those 15. I mean, that's invaluable, but you and your team have to be able to draw it out of them and apply some structure and rigor and discipline to equip them to act on that in a fashion that's going to move the company forward. That's where the skill and the methodology and all that is, right?
Yeah, and that's what the book's all about. They need a common language. They need a common thought process. It doesn't have to be complicated, but it has to be common. And once you get people from different functions that have different acronyms, different philosophies, all of that kind of stuff, into a single room on a particular issue that's very important, then you can get all of this stuff done. If the initiative wasn't important, you wouldn't get the right people. If the if the right people weren't in the room, you wouldn't get the right result. But it requires that those folks get together, use this process as a way to get to a single place and in a common direction. And then a lot of heartache is removed when you start looking at people who actually have to implement this stuff, because now they have a clear vision, and normally they don't.
Well, I bet it is. And that's my new quote now. You're going to hear me repeat that, and I may or may not remember to give him credit. But it doesn't have to be complicated, but it does need to be common. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, I got to know, how do you market this stuff? The consulting arena is very crowded.
Yeah.
Is it enough just that you were a bigwig at Coke? I mean, who doesn't like Coke, right? Or how do you go to market? Is the phone ringing? How does that work for you?
Well, I think at the core, it's a relationship business, like every consulting business. The benefit of having these sessions that have 15 or more people in them all the time is that we're building relationships while they're doing their strategy. And so what we find is that they come into what we call a strategic profiling action planning session or a playing to win session and have a good result when they're recruited into it. And then they have similar types of issues in their own parts of the organization or their own organizations that need to use this in order to speed things up.
Now, you mentioned that part of this, the book, was actually creating a platform for certification. Was that the initial vision, is to have kind of certified people in different organizations kind of running these meetings and doing this kind of implementations?
It is. There's something called strategic profiling, which is sort of like a Myers-Briggs for cross-functional initiatives that links into the process that we have in the book. And then there's certification around it so that people can learn it in a more granular way and then apply it in their own companies.
So now that was your vision of the company, is to kind of create an army of certified people out there running your methodology?
It wasn't the vision of the company when we started it, but more and more it seems like it's the best opportunity for people to make it real in their own organizations and to put their own fingerprints on it.
Mm-hmm. And then, so where are you at now in the certification? Do you have people certified right now?
We do have people certified right now, but it's on the early stage. We finished the e-learning program that is part of it. It's a 3.5-hour program, and that became available towards the beginning of this year.
And is that one of your initiatives, is to go out and kind of spread the word about that and get people certified in different organizations?
Largely after they've had experience. I like them to have experience in the real environment to get all of this stuff done, and then have an interest in the book and the certification so that they can do it themselves.
And who would be the profile of the person to be certified in an organization?
It can happen in different ways. I would say somebody who is a very senior project manager is a possible candidate. Somebody who is a facilitator within a company is another. An external facilitator is something that we haven't gone for yet, but that's probably a good candidate as well.
Now, in your career, having worked in kind of large corporations and now coming in as a consultant to large corporations, how has that been for you in terms of kind of wearing different hats, one as being kind of the name brand and now you're being the one that's serving the name brands?
I like it. You know, it's a little bit like being a grandparent versus a parent, I think, you know, to be a consultant versus somebody who's on the other side of the table. But it's a great opportunity to cross over a lot of different industries, which I wasn't able to do before, and a lot of different functions that I wasn't able to do before, and a lot of different kinds of initiatives. And so for me, it's been a very good next step. And I think because of the first part of my career, we can be more effective on the consulting side because we've actually been on that side of the table and have more empathy and more experience on getting things done in that environment.
Now, is it you that's going out and doing the work, or do you have kind of a team of consultants that go out there?
We have a team of consultants, and it varies on the level of the complexity. I tend to do things at the C level, and then things that are done under the C level tend to be done by others within our organization.
Now, how did you recruit those other consultants?
It just happened over time. You know, initially it was people who I was experienced with and who wanted to become part of it. But then over time, we've gotten people who I had never heard of before, and they like the book and they like the way that it works.
So they're super fans of the book and you. So then they said, how do I get
me? That's you? Debatable, but the, part of the team. But the book for sure.
So now tell us about the writing the book process. Was that a hard thing to do? I know you said you kind of had a brain dump in between projects, and then getting it published and doing all that stuff and the marketing of it, was that was new to you as well?
Yeah, it was a labor of love. You know, when I left Coke, I had all of these books. That's the 50,000 pages.
Right, you've already read the stuff.
And so they're all highlighted, and I did want to integrate them because I thought they could be integrated. And so it was a labor of love from that standpoint, because I was taking stuff that I already thought was important,
right,
but that wasn't integrated enough.
And you're then curating it and kind of putting it into buckets that are...
Yes, that are related to the methodology that we were talking about here, the process,
right,
that and how it works, and then how it can be applied in any organization.
Did you get it traditionally published, or was it self-published?
It was self-published, although we did have an offer from a traditional firm. I just wanted more control, and it's something that is so unique to our clients that it's a lot easier to have it done through Amazon.
Right, and you can customize it to individual clients if they want.
If you want to, it's much easier to do that. It's just much easier for this kind of a book, for this kind of a client to do something through Amazon versus a traditional publisher who doesn't really care nearly as
much. Exactly.
All right. Where can our listeners go if they'd like to have a conversation with you or someone on your team about these topics? And where can we get our hands on this book?
Well, the book's available on Amazon and other carriers as well, but I would suggest Amazon. The best way to get a hold of me is jbergstrand@cnsqnt, which is consequent without the vowels, .com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your story. It sounds like it's an exciting time for you guys, and we look forward to following your work, man.
Stone, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And
yeah,
Lee, thank you.
Sure.
Hey, hang out with us for a little while longer.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, we got one more guest we're going to visit with. Lee, you ready for this one?
I am.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with the CEO and president of Black Tie Events and DJ Songlist. He's got a couple of companies going here. I suspect the way to pronounce your last name is Leggett. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely correct.
However, when I was looking at your brochures before the show, I was thinking, you know, if he's a radio personality, he's doing all that, maybe it's Rich Legit.
I heard it. I've heard that a million times.
All right.
And maybe if I was a smarter guy, I would have changed it back then and done it that way.
Well, please join me in welcoming to the show Rich Leggett. How are you, man?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here. I totally enjoyed the presentation that we just listened to. So, very smart guy. I wish I'd written a book, maybe one day.
It's not too late.
Yeah.
So now you're used to dealing with chaos and lots of cross-functional challenges in your work. So tell us a little bit about Black Tie Events and how you pulled those things off.
So I dabbled in radio, communications major at George Mason University, ran my college radio station, and then did a little bit of radio on the side. And as terrestrial radio started changing, you guys probably know this from being in the business. You know, you do six-month contracts, you're in different cities, and I just wanted to settle down. So I've been doing private events on my own, wedding receptions, private parties, that kind of stuff. Came to Atlanta and started my own company. Actually, I worked with a different company initially until 2001, and then started Black Tie Events. And we are a full-service DJ entertainment company. We do about 400 events a year, 75% of those being weddings. In addition to doing the DJ MC end of it, we also handle lighting, up lighting, dance floor lighting. And then we just started a photo booth company called Paparazzi Station, which is tied into our business. So we're trying to get little pieces all together to make it full service for our clients.
So now, would they hire you? Do you help them choose the facility where the event's at, or they have already chosen the facility by the time you're involved?
Yeah, typically the facility is the first thing that they will do. So we are probably third or fourth in line after the facility. These days, most of the facilities in the Atlanta area, unless it's a hotel, have a ceremony site there at the facility. So they can do both. They can do the ceremony and then transfer right into the facility. So we saw a need for that as well. So we also do ceremony music and lapel mics for the officiant and kind of take care of that in a package as well. So we do a variety of different packages to help make sure the brides can one-stop shop and not have to worry about anything.
And then how do they find you? Is it now just like kind of digital online? You have to be really present, or are there events like wedding events where they go and shop for a bunch of vendors in one place?
Yeah, you know, social media definitely helps. There are a couple of big wedding websites out there, The Knot being one of them and Wedding Wire being the other. We were voted best DJ service in the Atlanta area 10 years in a row by Wedding Wire magazine. And then The Knot, I think it's been the last 8 years in a row. And exposure like that helps. I mean, clients can go on there and read 200 to 300 reviews from different clients that we've done. We also have over 60 wedding venues in the Atlanta area that refer us out. And that's huge. I mean,
so just part of your business is just schmoozing wedding venues?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because you want to be on that list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if it's so much schmoozing. We go out and we do a good job, good quality job for the venues. And the venue directors realize that, you know what, this is a company I'm not going to have to worry about. Not going to have to worry if they show up, and not going to worry about them doing a good job for us. Because a lot of times, when facilities refer somebody out, they want to make sure that the folks that they're referring out do a good job
right.
for them, or otherwise it's going to come
Correct.
Back on them. Yep.
Now, walk us through what the process is like when you I guess it's bride-centric. Is yeah. the bride the driver of this, or the...
Typically the bride. Sometimes it's the mother of the bride, and sometimes it's the groom. Sometimes the entertainment end gets
passed
on to the groom.
That's your, they throw them.
Exactly. They throw them a bone and right. say this is your bone to handle, so you handle that.
So you meet with them. What are some of the first questions that you're asking them or they're asking you?
Well, typically they want to know if they can pick their own songs. Our service is kind of unique. I kind of crafted out a business model for our service, in that rather than having one DJ or one entertainer who's super entertaining and another one that's good at mixing music and another one that's good at doing events with older type of music, they get to customize our performance based on what they're looking for. So whether that's how involved and outgoing they want us to be, certain styles of music they want played, times they want the events
done.
So
are you doing this via just a conversation, or is there a form they're filling out?
No, I actually have, it's a twofold process with the planning. I actually have planning forms for both the ceremony and the reception, and I mean it details everything line by line for them. And then they fill those out, and then we do a consultation with them leading up to the event where we walk through step by step and talk to them about different options.
And then, like, how many songs is in a wedding typically?
You know, for the average wedding reception, based on the length of the song, you're probably looking at maybe 70 songs.
And so you're going, letting them pick the 70 exact songs they want?
Yeah, you know, brides and grooms, and that's where the DJ song list, which we'll talk about in a minute, comes in. But bride and grooms do it different ways. Some of them will give you half that amount. They'll give you 30 or 40 songs and say, okay, you know what works with the crowd, so take our 30 and 40 and find songs that mix with that to keep the flow going. The other half say, these are my 70, and this is all I want played. Don't take any requests. Just make sure that you work these 70 in. And then the third way people do it is give us way more than we have time to play, and then they let us kind of pick and choose
right.
and fill in the blanks.
And then you work in any way they desire, right?
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Now, what about the different kind of genres of music? Do they say, like, for Stone, he only likes two, country and Western. Those are the only two that he likes.
Yeah. Well, and they can do that. I always suggest with a wedding, because you have such a big cross-section of people, that you try to add as many genres as you can, because you have everybody from your grandmother and her friends to your friends coming. So the more diverse you can be with the music selection, the better it's going to be. So not only with our clients can they go in And they can give us specific songs they want played, but they can also give us genres they want us to concentrate on, mm-hmm. just in case they don't know, you know, the Motown era or the 60s era or right. the big band era. So,
and then you mentioned the DJ Song List app. Can you tell us a little bit about
that?
How
absolutely.
That helps this process?
Yeah. So I just launched this in 2018. I had an app built for my clients here in Atlanta that would basically go through and help them pick songs and then email them to me via the app. So I'd have a printed song list,
right.
and that attaches to the forms that we send out. And then it just took off like wildfire. I had people calling me from all over the country saying, hey, can you do the app? I'm in California. Can I download the app there? So I did it nationally and put it up on Apple. And we do have an Android/desktop version that's coming out. But the neat thing about the app is they can go in, they can create a song list. We have a DJ song list team. So we have other DJs across the country who are in the team. They just click on the name of the person they want it to go to or the company they want it to go to. It's pre-sorted. So you can go to a wedding category and it gives you suggestions for first dance, introduction dance, father-daughter dance. You can actually click on the icon and listen to a sample of the song. So you can kind of see what it feels like and sounds like. And then you pull it over into a list. When you're done with the list, you actually hit submit and it emails it to either the company that you added or you can add an email in and they get a printout of exactly what they want played. So it's really, really a cool tool. It is the only one out there. When I started investigating it, there are a lot of tools for DJs to use to plan music right. and get music out there and organize it, but nothing for a backside client, like a wedding reception, bride, or an HR person who's planning.
Because it can
party.
Give you a snippet of it. It can't give you the whole song.
No, right? No. It's just, yeah. We worked a deal with Apple where we were able to use the same song samples that you use on the iTunes Store.
Right.
So it's a 30-second sample. They can download it if they want to buy the song through
right.
the app. It has a buy button right there so they can buy it. But it has been taken off. We're getting ready to go to Wedding MBA in November.
That's a trade show?
It's a huge trade show.
Really?
Yeah. 10,000 wedding professionals from all industries. And do a booth there and talk to people about it there.
What does that look like?
It is a madhouse. I mean, you have everybody from florists to caterers and a big, huge convention center. They have breakout sessions based on the industry.
So it's just like wedding planners?
It's wedding planners. It's caterers. It's event design folks. It's
but who's
DJs.
Walking the halls?
The other industry professionals, and you also get brides and grooms that come in and do it. So
this is like a mega wedding event?
Exactly. Exactly.
So there's people being married that are going there to look for...
They can
nationally. They're looking for
and you wouldn't believe that, but yeah, there are a few. It's mainly vendors that come to see the other services that people are offering
right.
or look at ideas. It's kind of an idea symposium as well. They have breakout sessions about.
Do you do any speaking?
They're talking to me about maybe doing something next year at Wedding MBA. So uh-huh. so I'm thinking about trying to do that, but
because you're an expert in some wedding. Media, right?
Yeah, I actually do some stuff for the Huffington Post whenever they need DJ comments on wedding trends and that kind of stuff, and also have done it for Martha Stewart weddings as well. Mm-hmm. So
what's a DJ question you would have answered for them?
Well, main thing is about music. What's the hot song that's coming out now? What's the best song for a first dance song? You know, little stuff like that.
So now, before we wrap, what are some do's and don'ts? For people trying to do the, don't do it on your own. Hire a professional.
I would definitely hire a professional.
Not your cousin who has the setup.
And it really is that whether it's with us or any of the other vendors in the wedding industry, it really is a business where you get what you pay for. So finding a good price is good, but bargain basement shopping is never going to
work. What's
out
a red
very
flag
well.
If somebody says, "Oh, I can do that"? Because how hard is it? I got a Mac.
Well, and I will tell you that
no, really, isn't
no,
that who, you're
absolutely.
Competing with some of those people, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You compete with those people. But what I tell them is, you need a professional MC, somebody who's going to announce the first dance and the wedding party and keep things going on that end. You need somebody that's going to be able to come out and do that with them.
And professionally, not
absolutely.
Say something inappropriate or how many times there must be a million horror stories.
Absolutely. I have done probably 2,500 weddings myself, and then I have a staff of 8 people here that work with me. So that's how we get to that 400 number. I just opened an office in Dallas, Texas, so we're doing weddings out there as well, and getting ready to open an office in Kansas City, hopefully. And, you know, what I do, I train all our guys. They're all about professionalism, all about running the event, because we kind of wear three hats at each event we do. In addition to playing the music, formatting the music, and helping out with that end of it, we also act as the master of ceremonies, which means making all the major announcements and professionally and making sure everybody knows what's going on.
And you
got to
keep the energy in the
room,
right? I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely. You got to keep the energy up and keep people engaged. I mean, you know, you're essentially not only playing music, but you're an entertainer.
Right.
You're there to keep people entertained and keep them dancing and keep them having fun. And I will tell you that 95% of the time when people leave a wedding reception, the two things they remember are the food and if they had fun. And, you know, everything else, I hate to tell a lot of brides this, but everything else is inconsequential, because what people want to do after a wedding, what they do is they'll come to a bride and say, I had the best time at your wedding reception. And most of the times we're responsible for pulling that off. So, you know, it's a big responsibility, but look, I love the industry. There's so many great people in the industry and love doing what I do.
How many weddings happen in Atlanta on a given weekend?
You know, it's funny you asked me that. I was going to actually look that number up and couldn't find a legit number, but I would say, you know, we've done as many as 20 on a given wedding. I know
in a weekend 20.
Yeah. We've done, I think the record was 23 for us one weekend.
Wow. So there must be hundreds then.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'd say thousands. I mean, there are so many wedding venues you wouldn't even
wow.
realize it. So it's a big industry here in the Atlanta area.
Well, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you and learn more, what's the best way to find you?
So they can go to our website, which is btevents.com for the Black Tie Events website. They can also download the app DJ Songlist on the App Store. They just go in and type in DJ Songlist and download the app if they want to try that. You can email me at rich@btevents.com. And then a phone number for us, 770-582-0525, if they want to get in touch with me or have questions.
And they can find you on Facebook, Instagram, all the
absolutely.
Usual suspects and social
absolutely.
Media.
Absolutely.
Good stuff, Rich. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.